This webcast is made possible in part by support from the listener members of the Classical Network, WWFM and WWFM.org. Thank you for your support. Cadenza, winner of the Deems Taylor Virgil Thompson Award for Broadcasting, is a production of the Classical Network. Funding for this program is made possible by the listener members of the Classical Network. I'm David Ozenberg, your host. Over these past months, we've been alternating programs featuring American composers with programs featuring top instrumentalists and conductors. Today, we visit with the pianist, composer, transcriber, and arranger, Eleanor Bindman, who practices an art that was so long a part of the piano repertoire and piano recital, that of the transcription. Born in Latvia, she grew up and completed studies in New York, a student of, among others, Vladimir Feltsman. She has devoted much of her career to the music of Bach, and on her latest recording, my guest, along with pianist Jenny Lynn, perform Miss Bindman's transcriptions of all six Brandenburg Concerti by Bach. She hopes these transcriptions will be published, and since they are not so virtuosic in character as past transcriptions of this beloved music, such as those done by the late German romantic composer Max Reger, my guest hopes many pianists will get to know these works better through her work. We'll hear much from the CD recording of those transcriptions throughout the program. You're listening to my guest perform one of her Russian transcriptions, that of the scary tone poem by Modest Mussorgsky, Night on Bald Mountain. I met up with Eleanor Bindman at her home in Brooklyn a few weeks back. Today with pianist Eleanor Bindman. Congrats on the two CD set
of your
transcriptions of all six Bach Brandenburg Concertos. Before we dive into the Bach specifically, just talk a little bit about the art of transcribing for the piano. Maybe first would help our listeners just the definition between transcription and arrangement. As you know, there's a basic difference between the two. But
do you know what the basic difference is? Because I thought they were kind of interchangeable.
Well, they are. And they are terms that can be interchangeable. Someone told me once, transcribing is actually taking it from one medium to another. You have to actually work a little bit with it. And arranging, you can really just either take something and sort of, like an arrangement of a popular song for an orchestra or something like that.
Right.
You're giving it new life, not trying maybe to stay so much close to the original. Transcription is you're trying to take it from its original state and do it pretty close to, but changing its medium.
To me, kind of sounds like the same thing, because
I think
once you change the instrument,
You
change the medium. I guess to me, a difference would be the way a Liszt transcribed, for example, he was such a magnificent personality that he couldn't help but insert largely himself. And, you know, to me, a transcription would be a more exacting, true to the actual content, whereas an arrangement,
there's a lot of freedom there.
Right, but it's really a matter of how, you know, we all kind of perceive words the way we have associations with them, so.
Well, bringing up Liszt and the generation after Liszt, or generations after Liszt. I mean, the piano transcription had a real golden age when it had served a real function before recordings. People could get to know these works. People could get to play them when they may not have had the opportunity to go to a concert hall, go to the opera house. So the Bach Brandenburgs are not the first time you've done this, and I'm sure it's not going to be the last. So
I hope not.
Just your idea of transcribing, I mean, your thoughts about transcribing things that are not for piano, for piano, and then what makes a good candidate for transcription? What are you looking for when you do these things?
Well, to me, it's a very personal project. Every transcription is personal. And I've always been interested in this idea of the piano as an orchestra. And
right.
of course, studying, you know, Beethoven sonatas, anybody who has any decent piano teacher is going to hear, you have to think of this orchestrally. You cannot play a Beethoven sonata or a Haydn sonata on the piano or a Mozart sonata without really giving it justice if you don't understand that there are orchestral voices that could be brought into it and give it life. You know, as I was playing Liszt transcriptions and various transcriptions when I was in my, you know, teenage competition, practicing a lot age, I just always loved the sensation of playing orchestral pieces on the piano. And my first transcription was Night on Bald Mountain by Mussorgsky, back in the days when there were no softwares for piano. So I wrote out the note after note because I wanted to play it. And that was my motivation. And whichever transcriptions I've done were largely because I wanted to be able to play this music, which is absolutely love.
Right.
And I think that Liszt, when he transcribed the Beethoven symphonies and, you know, Symphonie Fantastique and all of those works, just also wanted to play them because he just loved the music and he could. And then the four-hand medium, of course, became an easier way for two people at the piano doing, you know, maybe in Vienna in the 1800s when every, you know, bourgeois person had a piano in Europe. They all played transcriptions and all kids took lessons and the piano was, you know, what the TV or what the computer is right now. So it still is a way for us to get to know pieces, and I kind of hope that the Bach transcriptions will be a way for people to know the Brandenburgs a little bit better.
So dipping into the two CD set of all six Brandenburg Concerti by Bach as transcribed for piano four hands by my guest today, Eleanor Bindman, here she is with Jenny Lynn. This the third movement of the Brandenburg Concerto number 2. Get any feedback, sort of blowback? I mean, there is tonnage of solo piano music. There wouldn't be any reason for anyone to make a transcription of anything from another medium to piano. There's no shortage of music. It's not
correct.
Like you're a bassoon player or something like that and
totally.
Looking for things to play.
Yeah.
Either encouragement from either other pianists or just sort of reaction to, you know, whether it's the Mussorgsky, whether it's Tchaikovsky, in this case the Bach, of saying, oh, thanks for doing that, or why are you doing that? I mean, I'm just curious, just from your circle of musicians.
It's definitely a mix. People who are used to playing forehand piano are extremely enthusiastic about this particular transcription. And other people are like, why do you want to do this?
Yeah.
Certainly, when I was studying with Feltzman at Newpaltz, for example, I would come in and I would play the Liszt transcriptions for him. And you know, he'd listen to me and then he'd say, why do you want to play this? And, you know, first I'd be intimidated. I'm like, oh my God, he doesn't like it. What do I say? And then right. One day I just said, because I like it. And he said, oh, no, that's a good reason. And that was it. You know, I was off the hook. The pianists haven't yet seen it. They want to see the music
right. That
I've seen. And Jenny, for example, thought, you know, it was a great thing to do and a great contribution. She totally agreed to do the project because she was like, wow, you know, think of how many kids are going to want to do it and what music school will be able to do with this material. And I think it's very valuable.
Well, that's my next question is, when you do a transcription, and I think you stated your idea with the Bach, the Brandenburgs. I mean, Liszt transcribed the Beethoven symphonies and the Symphonie Fantastique, things, all these kind of things. But they're also fiendishly difficult to play.
Right.
So they're not for amateurs. They're not for even an accomplished amateur. But you wanted to take a different route, right? You wanted to try to do transcriptions which could be played by someone who wasn't as accomplished as you are as a pianist.
Well, especially with this music, I found that in order for me to make a successful transcription, I needed to dilute the material a bit.
Yeah.
Or rather, I don't know if I should say to dilute or to crystallize, because I had to take some things out, yet I need to leave the really important things
right. In.
And I needed to think about what would be playable by two people at the piano who, you know, are bumping into each other, whose hands are really close together, because the register is not exactly like Symphonie Fantastique. You only go so much with the Bach pieces.
Right.
So it was really a challenge in terms of that to create a piece. And then, again, I wanted people to be able to play them, because the whole reason I did this was because I found that the existing transcription is, in my opinion, totally unplayable, up-tempo.
Right.
And also totally unclear. When you look at the music, you can't really see the lines. You can't see the polyphony. You can't see which is actually the line that needs to be highlighted, because there are all these clusters of chords that you see.
Right.
So I really, out of frustration, did one arrangement, and then I had this nagging feeling for two more years. I really have to do the rest of them, but it was such a daunting, you know, project that I didn't get to it until I just, you know, one day I just said, okay, I got to start little by little.
But as you said, you can never have enough Bach.
Thanks.
And in the existing transcription you're talking about, Max Reger did
a transcription. Yes, and apparently there were some others that I really didn't know about until, you know,
there have been
now.
A few others, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe just, again, for our listeners, so you can get a clear picture of your kind of motivation to, you stated it, but problems with the Reger is just that it's overloaded, it's imbalanced.
It's overloaded on top because most of the instruments are, you know, in the treble range. You have all the violins, you have the violas, and you have the respective solo instruments,
right. Which
except, you know, for the sixth one, where there is really no high range instruments, you know, which also presents a problem for what it is. There's the two recorders, or there's a flute, or there's a solo violin, or two French horns, or an oboe. So all of that material has to be in the treble. And in order to detangle it, one really had to spend a lot of time and look at it, and he just didn't have the time. You know,
right.
I think he was a very busy composer, conductor. He did some excellent transcriptions, and this one, he just kind of lumped everything in the treble. And then the secondo, the bottom part, it has mostly just the cellos and the basses, you know, doubling octaves.
Right.
So the person playing secondo is terrifically bored, really, most of the time. I've experienced that because I tried to play through these many times before I made the transcription. And then the person on top is trying to get through the notes and really not understanding what needs to be highlighted, because there are, you know, too many notes, Mozart, kind of.
Continuing to sample from the new 2-CD set of the 6 Brandenburg Concerti of Bach, as transcribed for piano forehands by my guest today, Elinor Bindman, here performing with Jenny Lynn, this is the third and final movement of the Brandenburg Concerto No. 3.
Okay, so some of the particulars of things you had to deal with and how you believe you solved the problem, made a solution. The first you kind of already mentioned is that these are concerto grossi. So there are these groups of solo instruments, and some of them have very distinct colors. And those that know the Brandenburgs think immediately of the trumpet and
right,
the oboe, the two flutes and four, and this kind of thing. So how, when those particular colors which Bach picked, other than the strings, to stand out, how did you go about thinking, how do I translate this to...
Well, I needed to clear, you know, logistically speaking, the area. I needed to clear whatever notes were happening around those solos.
Yeah.
Most of the time, relegate them an octave lower, so sometimes even an octave higher, just so that there's enough space and the solo can be heard. And largely, a lot of the problems were solved by giving the secondo, the right hand of the secondo, some of the parts, some of the solo parts.
Mm.
Because on the piano, you don't really need to double the octaves on the bass because there's enough resonance. Plus, it creates too much volume on the bottom. You know, the person on top is struggling. So that was the main thing, give secondo a lot of parts. And then the harpsichord part, for example, in the fourth and fifth concertos, some of it had to go down an octave also.
Right.
So a lot of it was a matter of register and also leaving out some notes, which gave us a clearer texture that's a lot better.
Do the pedals play into this at all?
Not very much. I'm usually of the school that avoids pedal, but for example, in concerto number 6, which was the only one that I really allowed myself to depart from the way it usually sounds, where, as you know, there are no high-range instruments
right.
in that concerto whatsoever, and the two violas have a canon that starts exactly on the same note in B-flat and exactly in the same register as the rest of the orchestra. So I spread the two solo entrances an octave apart, and then you can't really play B-flat major arpeggios really fast on the piano. It's kind of like, almost sounds like Brahms. Bach's theme for that particular concerto literally spans two octaves. So I did use the pedal in the sixth concerto to create this cushion of these chords,
mm-hmm.
Underlying chords, and then Jenny took one of the melodies and I took the other one of the canon, and it sounds completely different, and we did need to slow it down a bit.
Yeah.
And there are also some sections in the fifth concerto where there's a little pedal for just for color.
Right, because the second area, people may not think of this, but it is the fifth concerto, because this is a piece that Bach broke a little ground with in making the harpsichord, the keyboard instrument, the solo instrument, one of the solo instruments.
Right.
And it really was the first time that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, in the first movement, it has, there's this gigantic harpsichord cadenza.
Right.
And I've listened to the recording, but you can tell our listeners, I mean, here you had to not take orchestral sound and put it on the piano. You had to take Bach's gigantic keyboard presence and make it work. What I found is when I listened, I mean, it's there, everything's there. It's, you had to say, it can't stand out as its own thing because it is, you're on the keyboard, you know, you're doing keyboard to keyboard type of thing.
Right, right.
So I'm just curious about number 5, because that did present probably a little bit of a, what am I going to do here?
Yes, and actually as I was doing it, some people said, you know, I can't wait what you're going to do with number 5.
Yeah.
So you got it there. Really, the biggest challenge was how do I divide the solo between the two of us?
Yeah.
And I did want to make it sound kind of like a harpsichord, so there are certain, you know, maybe slight tempo variations and tone that we tried to reproduce, but it was a lot of fun. And the biggest challenge was tossing the really fast runs between the two of us, because the harpsichord, as you know, the key mechanism is a little different than the piano, so it can by nature play a lot faster.
Right.
So there was a lot of articulation challenges there, and of course Jenny's, you know, magnificent, and she has a great, you know, crisp sound that she can produce, so that was really successful. But just as the runs were happening, there are all these other instruments that are playing during the tutti's as well, and those were the biggest challenges as far as distributing
right.
the hands.
So here is the portion of the first movement of Bach's Brandenburg Concerto No. 5, where he lets the solo harpsichord, a new concept for the time, step into the spotlight with a long extended cadenza. Once again, this is the transcription for piano 4 hands by my guest, Eleanor Bindman, who plays here with Jenny Lind.
third thing here, just as a challenge for all six, and you've already talked about it, but maybe just go a little bit more into depth, is density of box polyphony that goes on here. Like you said, it all occurs, I mean, as far as range, it occurs in all these couple octaves, but then there's so many lines going on at the same time, and you literally had to, I'm thinking of like pulling apart a tangled fishing wire, you had really to pull it apart and see, okay, what can I take out, what can I leave in?
Yeah, I mean, this took nearly 2 years.
Yeah,
And it took, several hours every day of dragging myself out of bed and like, oh my God. And by the time I was in the fourth concerto, things were really, I really had trouble pushing myself to keep going. But you're absolutely right. And the biggest challenge was number one, concerto number one, because it has the largest score for, and the French horns are the solos, and they're right there in the middle.
Yeah.
I started with the basses. I put that line down. Then I looked at the solos. I put that down. If I needed to distribute that in different octaves, so be it. And then I just saw what else is there and what else I could fit in.
Yeah.
And basically what I ended up with in most cases is what I said in the liner notes. It's kind of like four-part inventions, because I kept all of the polyphony, but there rarely is more than four voices that are important that are going on at once. And the ear, when we listen to Bach, I think most people can't even keep track of three voices. So the sound and this abundance and this excitement is there when all four voices are playing. And, if the viola part is missing, nobody can really hear it. So I kept weeding it out. And once I put everything down, there were three rounds of edits. The first I did myself. I tried to, stretch myself, and sometimes I'd even like play some notes with my nose because I just wanted to see what the sound would be.
Right.
And of course, as I kept going, I got better accustomed to, imagining what it would be. And then I played through with various pianists, and then played through with Jenny, and I kept cutting things out. And then literally after we recorded, I asked Jenny, and as we were rehearsing, listen, tell me the truth. Like, tell me how this is. How is it to play? Because I was only playing my part up tempo. She was playing hers. Tell me if there's anything, you think I should do. And she's like, cut out the places where there are thirds. Because I still try to keep some harmony there, but they're hard to play up tempo. So it's just weeding out. And I still, as I said, I took out probably like 24 notes, literally, after we already recorded, to make it easier.
This is radio, so the video would explain this all. But what about just traffic on the keyboard? I mean, your hands, assume you're crossing over at certain points and all the rest of that, but just knowing that you have to get that many notes in and there's only so much room on the keyboard. So, but you have experience with this. I mean, you've performed in a duo before and all this kind of stuff.
A lot. I've played many years. I have a piano duo partner that I used to perform with a lot, and I just felt that I could make the best of it as much as I could. I try to distribute things. I try to see what's possible. And it's really the numbers 4 and 5, where there is a harpsichord that's all over the keyboard, where things really became interesting. And up-tempo, really difficult. But again, Jenny's a pro. I can play the piano, so we managed.
And one of your goals is to get these published by 2021, right? Which is the 300th anniversary.
Yes, it's the 300th. It's actually my main goal. That was the main goal I started with.
Right.
It's great to have the recording, and I'm really happy with the way it came out.
Right.
But my main goal is really to make this accessible, because I think people think that there are transcriptions of Bach, and that's what the critics have been writing. They quote me and say, oh, well, yes, there is a transcription by Reger, but nobody plays it. There's not a single, Anderson and Rowe hadn't made a recording of it yet. Where is it? Who's playing it? People either play it very, very slowly, or there is a recording. There are no videos, and that's because you can't play it. Who wouldn't want to play the 6 Brandenburg concertos?
Right.
I mean, everybody plays the Mozart sonatas.
Right.
And, I love Mozart, but these works are magnificent. If they do exist in a four-hand piano score, actually, they're a much easier study of really how great they are, because who's going to really look at the orchestral score and take in exactly what's going on? You can't, because there's just too much going on.
Right. It's kind of interesting to think back, because, again, going back to what we talked about, transcriptions, there are tons of solo keyboard music of Bach. But Bach himself did this, right, like with the Vivaldi concertos. I want to play these on organ, Now, of course, he doesn't have a keyboard, but, you know,
right.
So he transcribes them to organs. So I don't know if this is that far afield from something Bach might have okayed or done if he thought it would have been helpful to instruct his sons or his pupils or something like that.
I should hope not. I mean, I don't think at Bach's time people were doing piano duets. You know, obviously there was no piano. Keyboard duets,
yeah.
I don't think they existed. The keyboards were too small.
Yeah.
People had wider elbows.
Yeah.
You know, their caftans, whatever they wore, was preventing all of that. So nowadays, I think forehand piano, you know, it depends on where you come from. When I was growing up, you know, the Russian Bible, Nikolaev School of Piano Playing, it had an entire section of forehand, you know, pieces, because that's how you learned. It was very much a part of learning to play the piano. Here, it's more of an amateur thing. I don't think in schools they pay as much attention to playing together. But I'm sure Bach would love to play two of his students together to play something of his, as opposed to one, if
right.
he had a chance.
Then yeah.
he'd have more time to do other things.
Well, I mean, there are artists. You mentioned Anderson and Rowe, and there's some, of course, there's always sister acts and, you know, things like that. And
yeah.
there are some groups out there now who are having success, both in concert and with recordings, you know, bringing some of this music and commissioning new pieces or transcribing,
right.
arranging new pieces.
And even some soloists who get together to do forehand once in a while. But I was told by publishers that whereas the concerts and, you know, the whole concert part of forehand piano is wonderful, the music business, the publisher business, is kind of suffers. There's not enough demand to buy things.
Yeah.
So even the Brandenburgs apparently aren't worth, you know, investing in by a publishing company, but those were the American publishing companies.
Make them so downloads.
Well, I haven't approached the European companies yet,
yeah.
and that's what I was hoping the recording would do, is once I had the recording with proof of what this would sound like,
right.
it would be easier to interest Germans, because they obviously appreciate Bach like no one else
right.
ever will, rightfully so.
Yeah, you have a little purist kickback to you, but...
Oh, of course.
Of
to
course.
Anything anyone anything, say, so. There'll be purist kickback.
Yeah, yeah.
My guest Eleanor Bindman with Jenny Lynn performed the first movement of the first Brandenburg Concerto by Bach in an arrangement for piano four hands by my guest from a new 2-CD set with all 6 Brandenburg Concertos on the Grand Piano label. Thank you.
about you? You mentioned the Russian school, born in Latvia.
Right.
And you got trained in that Russian school and then came here. So for our listeners to say, so what does that mean? What of your training carried over once you came here and started performing here?
Well, my training literally...
That makes it different from maybe an American pianist or an Asian pianist or something like that. No.
Huh? I don't. Can we say these things on radio?
So many kids now playing, coming over from China and Korea and playing, and they're getting training there and honing their craft here. So many American pianists, you know, whatever institution they end up with and whatever teacher they end up with, you know, they're getting a different training here. You grew up in a very kind of, I don't know. Well, I mean, what was the Russian school that you first were?
Well, I don't really know. You know, after I came here, I kept studying with teachers who were all descended from the Moscow Conservatory, core. So, there are teachers who never bothered to tell you what you did right. You know, they never said, oh, well, this sounds great, but this and this and this. They just started right off with, okay, this is wrong, this is wrong, and this is wrong. And it's just a very non-compromising way of teaching. And what I think is different, because I really have not experienced, I've taught here for decades, but I haven't, I've never had an American teacher for a long time. I don't really know, but there's just so much emphasis on analysis and the theory behind the piece and really, you know, seeing what the piece means and allegory and all kinds of similes and analogies that come from all areas of art. And I think that's something that maybe doesn't happen here as much or... You know, there's a lot of emphasis on kind of living the piece as you perform it and on just studying the history around the piece, on, you know, making music.
Over the past years, I've had, some instrumentalists, violinists and stuff who were born or went to the Russian school, but especially composers, too. And they mentioned the same thing you do. There's a lot more cross-pollination of various arts that come into the discipline, and maybe that doesn't quite happen here. Maybe there's not the time to do it, or it's just not the way that's set up here to do.
Right.
I'm sure some teachers do it on their own, but, you know, it's not.
Right. You know. It comes into the discipline and the lesson. You know, I've had teachers give me books of poetry, you know, to get inspired by whatever it is, you know, they were talking about.
As far as taking, like the Bach and some of the transcriptions you've done, but moving it into performance... Recitals, I don't know when you give a recital, but I mean, again, if you go back to the Golden Age, those pianists used to have standard repertoire, Mozart sonata or something, but then they would play transcriptions and then they'd play original pieces. You know, that would be kind of the mix of your recital, where that's not really the case now. I mean, recital's kind of all over the map, but, you know, but someone might be a single composer recital, all Schubert or something like that. So I'm just curious, I mean, do you hope, whether in your own programming for recitals or as, you know, your transcriptions of the Bach or whatever comes, do you hope that this kind of sort of rounds itself around into showing up on the stage live rather than just recording?
Well, I hope so, and I have done it in the past. I've actually made one transcription of a single movement from the Brandenburgs, the only movement that I thought could ever be accommodated by two hands, which is the slow movement of number 4.
Yeah.
There's a video out there. I do this weekly Monday morning Bach video, and it's actually going to be a year now since I've been doing that. But certainly playing transcriptions is something I've always loved and I've always done in recital. I've played my two Tchaikovsky transcriptions, you know, when I do the Seasons recitals, and certainly the Mussorgsky along with pictures people like.
Yeah.
So I do hope to make a little bit more of a cost. And I think there are a lot of pianists these days who actually incorporate their own transcriptions. I think Trifonov, a lot of Russians have done all kinds of Tchaikovsky and a lot of other things, which I'm not, you know, that cognizant as far as the amount and, you know, the catalog, but I think people do it more and more, and I really think there are quite a few famous pianists out there who have made transcriptions of, have played them for themselves and recorded them.
Here's my guest Eleanor Bindman in another of her Russian transcriptions, this the famous waltz from the opera Eugene Onegin, music of Tchaikovsky. Thank you.
what's next? Like, I mean, I said, what do you have some plans to either transcribe other pieces, or I mean, what's down the line here?
At this point, I'm still giving myself a breather after this, but the natural question is, you know, what about the orchestral suites? And I've looked at them.
Yeah.
And they are actually a lot different in texture, and they would be a lot easier to transcribe. And Reger has done a version which is exactly like the Brandenburgs, very uneven,
right,
and difficult to play, and again, not being played. So people have been asking me, you know, Jenny was asking me, so are you going to do that next? So so I think it's hard for me to avoid furthering the cause that way, and I'd like to do that. And also, I'm very much interested in reworkings of Bach and just playing other things as well. So,
is there anybody outside of Bach, any other pieces that you... I mean, like you said, you did the Night on Bald Mountain just because you wanted to play it. Are there any other pieces that have like been gnawing at you to say, I really should try to...
Really not at the moment, because it's important for me to, you know, kind of make a contribution of something that will be useful to other people as well. And at the time that I made the Night on Bald Mountain transcription, I wasn't aware, you know, if there are any others.
Right.
And, there are others, apparently. Now with the internet, you see that they exist. With the Bach, I knew that there was nothing worthwhile out there, so that was important. But as you said, you know, Liszt has done a lot of great pieces already, and there are other people who occupy themselves with this.
Sure.
And, you know, if you go to IMSLP, that website, the catalog, there are a lot of transcriptions of fantastic, you know, works by... The main works of the classical repertoire have been done, I think. But this has not been done properly, I think. So I'm hoping that people will see that way also.
Well, again, congrats on the recording, and I hope you get it published in time. And it's great that you did it. It's a lot of fun. I mean,
Thank you.
You get to that last movement of six. I mean, and that kind of Bach kind of set it up so that that really works with the because the motif kind of calls back and forth. But
yeah.
I mean, it really works. It rollicks along, on the, and it's just proof that, you know, it can change medium. And still, well, it's always Bach, right? You can play Bach on anything, and it still sounds like Bach. He's like indestructible.
I believe that.
Yeah,
yes,
it's quite amazing.
Yes. Not that anybody wanted to destroy him, but
no.
Yeah, it's been really great, and I really appreciated the feedback of people who actually say, you know, I they will write to me and they say, you know, they just completely changed my mood. I put this on and I was in a bad mood, because there's something to it that has this energy that comes through Bach. I think it's, you know, it's Bach's energy that comes through these pieces, no matter how you play them. And the keyboard and the modern piano is just perfect for it.
Yeah. I close all my cadenza interviews by asking my guests the same two questions. The first is a hypothetical, which says if you could chat like we've been chatting, but with someone from the past, someone you never had a chance to. I'm just curious. It might be an obvious answer from who we've been talking about. But, I mean, when I ask that, what's the first thing that pops into your head? Usually if you think about it, you get swamped. But...
Yeah, we're talking a music person.
Doesn't course, matter. Right? I've had everybody from... Jesus to Groucho Marx, but you know, but you know, usually it's a musician.
Well, Jesus wouldn't say much, and Groucho wouldn't stop talking.
Right,
who wants to talk to them? The first person that popped into my mind was Liszt, no question.
Really? Okay.
No question. I just think people don't do him justice because he wrote so many competition pieces and so many difficult banging pieces, and my favorite things to play is, you know, the Il Penseroso by Liszt from Anais de Pèlerinage, because Liszt has these passages where there's one measure of one note at a time in this bass register that's absolutely to die for.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think people hear those the way they should be heard. But also his life, and, you know, I think he was just a wonderful person that behind all the glamour and whatever biographical sketches exist just is not really so penetrable, because people tend to look at the glitzy, you know,
faces. Yeah, you've been fascinating to talk to, too, just the cross-section of who he knew and who knew him. And
exactly.
Amazing. Final question is non-musical, meaning everybody I interview on Cadenza fills their life with music, very busy. You're teaching, playing, transcribing, but when you have to do something that's non-musical, if you want to take yourself away from music, pleasure, relaxation, enjoyment, what do you do?
When I find time, which is difficult with a family that's still growing, what I do is I walk out of my house with no phone, no bag, no nothing, and just try to go somewhere. And it's amazing how difficult that is and how it puts you in this place, because we're always going somewhere, and my mind is, you know, our minds are always either ahead, thinking about what we need to do, or dwelling on something in the past, whether, you know, it's something that we're really happy about or something that, you know, we're still fretting about, and you have no purpose and you don't know where you are, I find that especially cleansing.
You're not connected either, because if you left here.
Oh, well, that, I could talk hours about
that. Yeah, I find
battles, you know, I have a son who's beginning to be a teenager. And, you know, he was the last person in this class without a cell phone.
So you've done this, just kind of walkabout?
I actually do this regularly as an exercise. It's very strange, but it really brings you in touch with, you know, what should be going on in my head, if anything.
Well, Eleanor Bindman, thanks for taking some time.
Thank you. It's been a great pleasure.
Pianist Eleanor Bindman. You can find out more about her at her website, Eleanor Bindman, ELEONORBINDMAN.com. The 2-CD set of her transcriptions for four hands piano of all 6 Brandenburg Concerti by Bach, she performing alongside pianist Jenny Lynn, is available on the Grand Piano label, distributed by Naxos. Check it out at naxos.com. I'll leave you with yet one more movement from one of the Brandenburgs, this the final movement from the final concerto, the number 6. Once again played by Jenny Lynn, along with pianist, composer, transcriber, arranger, and my guest today, Eleanor Bindman. As always, I'm glad you're in the audience today, and I hope you'll join me here each week for a chat with the great classical musicians of our area and the globe. Remember, you can catch any recent past Cadenza program by going to wwfm.org and clicking on Classical and then Webcasts. I ask you to please support this and the many specialty programs we offer by making your donation today at our website. Thank you, and thanks for listening. I'm David Ozenberg, and this has been the award-winning Cadenza, an exclusive production of the Classical Network and WWFM.org. ¶¶